Houston Running Zone, the ultimate podcast for runners in the Houston area, featuring the everyday runners who inspire us, clubs, gear, races, and runcations. Houston, we've got the runs.
All right, today in the zone, I have one of the hardest working co-race directors in trail running here to talk to us about some awesome upcoming races here in 2021. But more importantly, kind of the reasons why he works so hard to put those races on. Please welcome Rob Goen. Rob, dude, welcome to the zone, man.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. Fun to be here.
Yeah, well, I wanted to bring you on, I guess it was 5-6 years ago, we kind of met from a mutual friend, Jeremy, so we'll give him a good shout out there. When you decide to put on your first race.
I talked to him yesterday.
Race, oh, really? Well, we got to check on his relationship status. Maybe we'll talk about that.
Okay.
But yeah, most of the time, I don't really go directly into the backstory of a race director, but for you and your races, I think it's super important that people kind of know where you come from. So you kind of talk a little bit about how you got into the running community in the first place.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, back in like 2009 or 10, I was a really big guy, 360-odd pounds, had never run in my life, was a smoker, drinker, so on and so forth, and ended up kind of meeting my wife now, kind of changing my life. And exercise was to burn calories, and I was losing weight. And I had seen friends of mine doing like sprint triathlons, and like my wife was on the elliptical. And so I ended up getting into actually activity in general as a way to lose weight, and ended up basically started running 2 days after I quit smoking. So I quit smoking on like a Monday, and on a Wednesday, it was like, if I'm going to replace an addiction, I need to replace it with something. And that's what people would tell me. So I started running. It was miserable. It was like the worst experience of my life. I think I ran like 30 yards and was just hated it. But slowly but surely, I started to run. And little by little, and then I remember being at like a 24-hour fitness and being on a treadmill and getting some miles in. And I remember them showing a triathlon on like one of the TV screens. And when they were showing the triathlons, they were kind of like talking about how this guy went from being bigger and how he was an addict. And this was like how he found his space. And it was a really interesting situation, because I felt like that guy was me in some way, shape, or form. And I knew that what they were talking about with him was what was inside of me. So ultimately, I started the Houston Area Trail Runners with Jeremy, my wife, Jose, because we were running races around Texas, and we wanted to kind of like bring that club, or we wanted to find out if there was more people in Houston that wanted to do trail running. And that was 2012. I think it was 2012. So almost 10 years now. And for the first 6 months, I think we posted like on everywhere we could that Saturday morning we would meet at Memorial softball fields and Sunday morning, and we never had anyone show up. And like, it was just like me and Jeremy, or me and Jose and Jeremy, or just Jose. Like, it did, but one of us was always there ready to like to see somebody. And then maybe around the 6 month mark, one person started to show up, two people started to show up. And then slowly but surely, you know, over the next 2 years, we built the club out to where there was a couple of hundred people. And we started putting on free races. And that's where all of it started, is we started to do, like, we had what we call the championship loop, which is like in the softball back there on the running trails. It was a 5-mile loop. And we basically put on a free race for 6 hours. So it's like you got to start the loop and do as many loops as you wanted in 6 hours. Wow. We put like an aid station out there. We timed it, you know, on BibTap. And I looked at what the races looked like that we would go to. It just basically just emulated a race setup at you know, for free. And the first one we ever put on was about 40 people. And then we did one. There's a backstory to this where I almost got arrested twice at Memorial Park for putting on races, free races. But
well, no permits or whatever.
Oh yeah, no, we didn't have no permits. No, I mean, there wasn't really anything to permit. We were just standing there, but they were not happy. But But at the end of it all, which was in 2013, we did a night race. And because it was in the end of the summer, and we had about 500 people show up to Memorial Park and to do a night race. So along that way, I started to talk to people that were showing up, and it was basically like, why are you here type asking. And then they were just like, you know, I wanted to come here because like I have family, I have kids. I don't want to travel to the Hill Country, which obviously if you guys, you know, that have been around in the, at the time, Tejas Trails was the only person kind of in the state putting on a lot of races. They had like 8 or 10 races or 12 races or whatever, but we had to drive to Austin. We had to drive to Burnett. We had to drive to San Antonio, right? So we were all having to make this huge drive and spend our weekends away from our families to go race or whatever that might be and incur the expenses. So I ended up putting on all these races, and a really great friend of mine named Larry Cosin, he's a San Antonio guy. He actually said, Rob, I'm going to go to Brazos Bend State Park and see if they'll let us put a free race on in the park. And they had already let a company named Pilates Powerhouse. They were letting them put on 2 free races a year in the park. And Pilates Powerhouse was this great like workout facility that they used to do these free races there. So
yeah, I did some of their races there. Yeah, that's cool.
There you go. Yeah. See, so, but Pilates really laid this groundwork because them being in the park and letting people doing a great job ended up opening the door. So we had a meeting with the park with a guy named David Heineke, who just recently retired. Larry and I were in there, and we're in there. So strange. But this is in November of 13. So we're in there and we're having this meeting. And then all of a sudden in the middle of this meeting, I don't know what happened. I kind of like blacked out. And I started pitching the park on a real race. Like, I want to do this 50 miler, 50K race in April. I'll bring like 300, 400 people to the park. Like, we got this. We're going to do it big, right? And the whole time, Larry, he's just sitting there like, what is going on, right? So I pitched the park on this, and the park is like, well, I guess like if you get the permits, like we can do it. And then I'm like in that same sentence saying, I'm going to put on a 100-mile race in December of next year, and it's going to be great, and it's going to be so fast. And the park guy was like, I mean, you know, like if you get your permits, but like, I know because I've talked to David, I know David really well, but he was like, there's no way this guy's going to bring like 400 or 500 people into this park. Like the most they've ever had at Pilates is like 200 or something like that. So we leave the parking lot. I'm stoked and excited. Like I can't, you know, like I can't wait. And then like maybe 10 minutes down the road, Larry calls me. He's like, hey bro, I'm in dental school. I don't know what the hell just happened, but I'm not helping you do that. Like you shot the moon. Like, what are you doing? But for me, it's like, we had put on, you know, 5 or 6 free races. I had been to, I mean, 50, 100 races in the 3 or 4 years that I was already traveling. So like, I kind of knew what that was. And I've always done events. I used to like set up my own birthday parties when I was a kid and like rent all the laser tag stuff. Like I've always loved being someone who was in charge of events and planning. So to me, it was kind of natural. And in November, we essentially said we were going to do it. We had this huge base of volunteers from the haters. So it was very much like a, hey, Rob is putting this on, but I was also the president of the haters. So it was like the haters would come and help, and they did. And we'd put it on kind of like as a group, like, you know, Rachel came in like maybe in January and started doing volunteer stuff. Jose was involved. Jeremy ran the hardest aid station. Like, you know, my mom drove down to work an aid station. My father-in-law and mother-in-law drove the shuttle vans. I mean, you know, this was, we borrowed all of the equipment for the first race from Snowdrop, who was using Fort Bend Fit stuff.
Oh yeah. Patty. Okay, cool. I got it. Yeah.
Yeah. Neat. So all of our jugs were Fort Bend Fit. All of the tables were borrowed. Like this was one of those things where it was like, and this was the same year, 2014, the Snowdrop started, which is why we're so aligned and like growth, because we really started at the same time. But yeah, it was one of those crazy things. We had 585 people register.
I was one of them. Yeah, it was a good time.
I mean, it was crazy. I mean, it was It was nuts. And we went to the grocery store like 10 times during the race. It was the most ridiculous thing ever. But yeah, you know what's funny? And the story goes is Rachel helped me the last couple of months. I have this big tax company that I own part of and built from the ground up, and was just, I just had fallen in so much in love with trail running as a community. I fell in love with the feeling of being accepted. I fell in love with the feeling of having value, that running gave me a purpose in life. It gave, and ultimately putting on a race and being the president of that gave me an opportunity to serve people. And when the race was over with, it was crazy. And we came home that night, and I remember waking up in bed with Rachel and looking at each other. And I remember she looked at me first and she says, "Well, what did you think?" And I remember like not wanting to answer because I was really nervous what she thought I would think. I said, "Well, what did you think?" And she looked at me, she goes, "It really made me think of our wedding day. Because we spent all this time planning this and it was so fast and it was so crazy, but it's over. Like everything's back in this truck and this is over with." And I agreed with her and it made us so happy as people that we ended up saying maybe 2 or 3 months later that I was going to sell my business that I had built from the ground up. Rachel, who has a master's in nutrition, who worked in a doctor's office, was going to quit her job. And we were essentially, over a period of time, which took about 18 months for us, we were essentially going to full-time race direct. We would both quit our jobs and we would do it because we knew that it made us happy. Like it really made us fulfilled as people to do something that was just selfishly, right? Selfishly out of us doing something we love. But there was just something magical about watching people finish a race. And I knew how much it had changed my life. I had gotten sober in that process of running. So I knew how much it meant to me as a person. And to see other people get that out of it, it was, to me, it was like, this is a just a blank sheet in the face to say, this is what you should be doing. And if, like, to me, it was like, I'm going to give up everything I have, per se, to go chase this opportunity to do this for other people. And that was 2014.
Wow. Super cool. You're an awesome storyteller. I don't have to ask any questions. This is great. But you know, we kind of mentioned Jeremy Hansen. So he was kind of one of your co-founders of the Houston area trail runners, Haters. How did you get involved with him? I mean, I guess at mutual friends, or how did that all work out?
I'll tell you how much of a great friend Jeremy is. Jeremy is the only friend that I still have from when I was not sober to when I was sober. Wow. So Jeremy actually knew me. No, most people don't, but Jeremy actually can tell you the stories, and he knew me when I wasn't sober. So he knew the reckless guy. He knew, you know, he knew my past. So he's the only friend that I talk to, you know, that is carried over from the time when I wasn't a sober person. So we've been friends years before. I mean, Jeremy started trail racing because Jeremy started running again in life because we had a friend of ours whose sister wanted to run the San Antonio half. She bet them that they couldn't do it. They trained. I ended up training as well. And we ended up running our first half marathon in San Antonio together. And then that was in November of like 11 or something. It was November of 11. And then I come home after a trip to West Texas and was running the loop at Memorial, you know, the 3 mile loop.
Yep.
And had ended up going across the street because I was just bored one day because it was raining, and ended up cutting onto the green trail, that back green trail. So I ran the trails in the water and in the mud, and called Jeremy. This is in January or something of that year, and said, like, "Jeremy, I don't know what these other things are back here, these trails, but this is like the greatest thing on earth. Like, this is so much fun." And like 2 weeks later, Jeremy and I went out there and did like 6 or 7 hours together. And that's literally how we found trail running. Like, we were like, I mean, there's great pictures of Jeremy in like cargo shorts.
Oh yeah.
Like knee high cargo shorts, like golf shirts and shit. Like we had no concept of like what trail running was, what the culture was. Like we would just show up every weekend and bring groceries in the back of our cars because we didn't know anything about like gels or nutrition. Like it was all so foreign to us. We just knew that like we could do this for like 8 hours. We could run and hike and walk. And like, because it was trails and it was harder, it was like the pace was different and it was just fun. It felt like kids. So that's how we got into it. This whole existence of having trail running is so many like by chance things. It's super crazy.
So you discovered trail running because you were bored and you crossed the street. So did you and Jeremy just had a couple of beers and were like, oh, we could run? Or like, how did you start running? Like, what was the tipping point there? I missed that.
I mean, we had both run half marathons. We had won the half at San Antonio. So it was just, where it really kicks off. This shows you how naive and stupid we were. You know, we essentially like found trail running. I signed up for a 50 mile race.
Oh my goodness.
And thought this trail race was on gravel. And of course, it was a real trail race called the Grasslands.
Oh.
And then like, I had never run more than that, like a half or maybe 20 miles. I signed up for a 50 miler. This is in March. Jeremy surprises me, and Rachel knew, and shows up at this race. This race is in Dallas. So Jeremy shows up to try to pace me, and I end up breaking my foot. This shows you how dumb we are. I'm running a trail race in Vibrams. I'm like 275 pounds. I mean, I shatter my foot on a rock because obviously if you're 280 pounds running a race with rocks, like what are you doing in V-rooms? And I broke my foot and I shattered my foot and Jeremy shows up just as I'm quitting the race. And he's like, I'm here to pace you. And I'm so excited to see him, but I'm like, bro, I can't walk. Like I'm done. But I walked enough to get the 32 miles. And for me, that was this huge like overwhelming accomplishment of being considered an ultra runner. Like I made 50K that day. Like I didn't fulfill my destiny. Right. But that was good. So like when we came home, it was like, let's take this really serious that year. And then that year was like, we did Cactus Rose. We started the Haters. It was like it was just like, we were already kind of friends and we were running, but we were, like everyone thought we were crazy. Like everyone was like, what the fuck are y'all doing? Like y'all are running every weekend. Like it doesn't make any sense. Like, what are y'all talking? And Jeremy, of course, Jeremy, you know how he is. He's like telling the whole world. It's like we got saved in church camp. You know, we're like, this is the best thing ever. You should all join us. And people are like, you guys are nuts. I don't know. It just stuck with us. And then, you know, like in October of that year, we ran Cactus Rose. 50 miler. I have the tattoo. So Jeremy, I, Jose all ran it. Jose and I finished. Jeremy didn't, but Jeremy was there and crewed and helped. He didn't finish this whole race. But like it's funny because in that race we met Mary Ann, who's like one of the greatest people ever that's a trail runner. Like every time we started going places, it was just we were just adding people to what ended up being the story of the Haters and Trot because we were just so new. I mean, we were just oblivious and just naive to everything. We're just like a rocket ship and we didn't know what we were doing.
Well, you still don't, but you're making it work. You're adjusting, especially with this last year. And I was, you know, before we hit record, I kind of mentioned that I wanted to hear your backstory because so many times people are like, okay, is this just a company putting on races or is this a runner that's putting on races? And that's what I love about your races. But one thing that Jeremy mentioned when I first met you, he says, yeah, he's trying to elevate the trail running experience because apparently, and I didn't know this because the only trail run that I did was the Pilates Powerhouse, Brazos Bend, of course, and I did your first when you did a 25K. And that was really much it. But he said trail running normally was kind of boring or, you know, it just wasn't up to what it is now. You know, what are some of the changes that you've added to make it awesome?
Well, I think in the time period when I started first race directing, I was also involved with a company that was filming races. So I was flying to the West Coast and the East Coast of the country, and I was seeing how they put on races. So ultimately, when I was when I was going to races and we were traveling as the Hater group and Jeremy and I were on vacations, we were going to West Coast races and they were just exciting. They were just like, I tell people all the time, I want you to come to our races and think of them as an event. I don't want you to think of it as a race. Like, I want you to come and there to be an experience that you enjoy. And it's not just predicated on the actual race. So when you would go to a West Coast race, you would see like these inflatables, which no one had, which no one did. And then these custom inflatables, you would see people finish and there would be like couches they brought in to like people would lounge, there'd be beers, there'd be an expo, there'd be more to do than just run a race and someone tell you good job, handshake you, and you walk out the door. Like, there was more to the experience. Like, you know, the whole reason that we have so much merch and that we like do a big job of merch and we brand and we have everything done is because one of my great friends who puts on, who owns Era Viper Racing out of Arizona, they put on the Javelina, they put on a bunch of races, Jamil Curry. When I went to his races, he had like a 20 by 40 merch tent. And I saw how much merch they had. And at the end of the race, they didn't have any more merch. And I was like, wow, this guy's like, he's taking brands like Nathan or Victory Sport Design or whoever, and he's co-designing and branding this stuff because people are following his brand. So for me, I purposefully set out to kind of look at all these people that I thought were doing a really good job, use my business sense, and try to elevate it to where it was like, and this sounds bad, but it's kind of like the great things like that are kind of cultish. Like, Tesla is cultish. Yeah. How people that love Era Viper are cultish. I mean, we have like 25 people that have our logo tattooed on it. I mean, and I'm the first one, but I own it. These people are crazy. We have 5 of those people don't even have another tattoo. That's the only tattoo they have. I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah. So it was the feeling of wanting to have this like cult-like following that was family, that we controlled how we wanted to do what we wanted to do. And I think I tell that all the time when we're talking about new ideas. And I tell people, we can do whatever we want to do. Like, we don't have limits or boxes. And our community says they want a 200 miler in the mountains, I'll go put it on. If they tell me they want a last man standing race, we'll put it on. If they tell us they want the craziest buckle they've ever seen, which I just think I just finally made with Possum's Revenge, with a possum riding a shark, holding a 3-scoop ice cream cone over a rainbow of fire, I'll do it, because ultimately I'm one person and our community is really big. But ultimately, I want to constantly ask them, what more do you want from the experience that we can give you? Because yes, the race is the race. But when I came into it, that's all it was. The race was just the race. You showed up, you ran a race, you got a medal. They were really crappy most of the time. And it was just kind of blasé. And me being the business person I was in, I was seeing Brazos Bend, all of these roadrunners come in. And the roadrunners that came to run Brazos Bend, they complain a lot. But they complain a lot because they come from the road, and the road is an event. The road has a post-race party with Muscle Milk and apples and oranges and a band. And, you know, like, but their complaints aren't really complaints to me. They're used to seeing all this stuff happen, and in trail running, they weren't seeing it. So for me, I took it as constructive criticism, and they would say like, yo, you should do more at your post-race. You guys don't have food. So that's how we ended up getting food trucks. And that's how we started building merch. And some of our races, we have a DJ come out, and we have, you know, the Red Bull DJ truck. And we do a lot of stuff that some old school trail runners think is corny and kooky. And I don't care two craps about what anyone else says. The people I care about is the community. It's our people that run our races that pay their money to run. They should have a say in how we put the race on. I mean, they're the ones, they're customers. So, I mean, people don't like to act like races and doing this stuff as business, but it is a business. I pay my mortgage doing this, but my parents were in the service business. Since I was 5 years old, I've been in the service business. It's all I've ever done. So if you're not servicing your clients, then you're an idiot.
You are in the Houston Running Zone. We've got the runs.
Yeah, you got to listen to your customers. They're the ones that are paying. And yeah, I think haters are going to hate. It's just how it is. We get it with the old school runners. Like, oh, medals should only be for half marathons and above. And I'm like, well, what about the person that just lost a bunch of weight or just got divorced? Or like, that's their goal is to get the medal. Who cares? Old school people.
It's a very like old school way to look at that stuff. And you know, the pendulum is swung, right? You know, so we're in a very like acknowledge me, you know, culture right now. You know, the pendulum for a long time was like, you know, just shut up and don't say anything and regress that stuff. But now we're in the swing of acknowledging people, and that's okay. And that's, I think that's good. And we've always done really big medals, and we've always done medals for distances, and that won't ever change. It's the way that it is. That's what people want.
And I think people don't realize how hard it is to put on a race. I mean, people complain about government, whatever. There's layers of government. If one person says no, you're done. Or at least for the race. So like, how hard is it really to put on the race? Obviously you don't talk government either, but you know, it's like what are some of the things you got to do to make sure that it's safe and all that other stuff?
I mean, it's all changed, right? I mean, we're now in the most heavily regulated time that we've ever been. I think one of the best things I could have done early in COVID was really lay out how these things were working and why races weren't happening and who was going to be able to put on races. I mean, back in March, I said, Houston's not going to happen. I don't care what you guys say. I don't care what you hear on the news or what your buddy tells you. Houston's not going to happen. And you can say it's going to happen, but it's not. And the reason it's not going to happen is because they're not giving people like me permits. And if they're not giving people like me permits, there's no way in hell Houston gets a permit, because that's not the way that this is going to work. So right now is the most unsettled and the most regulated we've ever been when it comes to events. And that's just not just like racing events. That's really anything that's an event based. And essentially you have an insurance company that insures your race. You have some sort of a governing body. It's like ATRA, USATF, RRCA, someone that's there. They make a decision. So you have two people there. Then you have a third one, which is your facility. So that's going to be private landowner, Texas Parks and Wildlife, city, whoever owns the land you're running. And now you have the county judge. The county judge also answers to the Human Health and Services. So they go one in the same, but they're essentially the first person that you have to get to say yes before everyone else will say yes. And even if everyone else says yes, it doesn't mean very much when it comes down to like your checkup of the race, meaning like your 90 day, your 60 day, your 30 day, your 2 weeks out, your week of. The truth is like now it's better than ever. But when it was this past year, you know, we had races canceled, you know, and I try to cancel my races far out. I know people don't like that, but the truth is like once I hear that it's not going our way and that it's not going to happen, I don't wait to see if it's going to happen, because it's never, ever happened after like they start to say certain words in meetings. Yep. And I'm like, I know what you're saying. I can read right between the lines. But ultimately, you know, the issue that most event directors are having right now is this. Yes, you can put on a race 6 months earlier and 3 months later, 2 months into it, when you want to get your permit, you want it signed off. It's this like, hey, want to sign it yet? We want to see how things go. Mm. And that's the problem, right? Is because we're all normally getting our permits 60 days out, 30 days out. We don't get our permits 6 months out. We just get a verbal, hey, yes, you can put the race on. Do it like you did last year. We're good to go. But see, that all changed last year. That good to go ended up being 3 months, you know, 3 months away from the race, you're asking for a permit or something to be signed. And it's like, hey, we just want to see what the numbers are, which is a clear indication that this is not going to go the right way. And then 2 months in, and then 30 days in, and then ultimately it's like, hey, we're not going to give you a permit, you know, even though that it's been promised or said. And even when you have permits, which I've had, even when you have permits and signed off and all those things, it still doesn't make a difference. Like if any one of those entities wants to pull it, they can, and that's just the way that it goes, and that's just life. And that is, unfortunately enough, you know, the way that the cookie crumbles. And you know, like some people can go about it a different way. You know, some people can do credit. Some people can't, depending on their situation. Some people only have one race a year. All of that for me is like, it's different for different races, because I have 19 races or 18 and I can push credits to another race. And I'm very grateful I can do that. There's obviously a tipping point for me to give, you know, race credits as well, because ultimately, like, you know, we have bills to pay and make a living, so on and so forth. But, you know, you're a guy that runs a local 5K that only has one race a year and he's already bought all the medals and stuff like that. Like, they probably can't do that. They're probably like, hey, come pick your packets up. This is all I can do. And like, do it virtually. And I got a lot with Brazos Bend, and people are super upset about Brazos Bend 100. I've got guys that write me and say, hey, listen, you know, like, you aren't out any money and you're doing this for prop. You're canceling races for profit. I'm like, there are five people that work for me full time, including Rachel and myself. I'm like, we have a warehouse. We have, you know, we have everything in the world to pay for, no matter if we put on a race or not. Like, it doesn't make a difference, right? But I'm like, that's not the way that this goes for anybody, especially if you do it for a living. It's, you know, like, there are from the time of March, you know, when we didn't put on a race, through the time of October, when I did put on a race, it's 7 months. Like, we didn't put on a race for 7 months. And people weren't signing up for races for 7 months.
Wow.
And it just is what it is. Like, that's the way that it goes. And we're in the same position as, you know, like your people that own pizzerias and stuff like that, that were limited in what they could do for a certain amount of months. So fortunately for us, I'm very grateful that as soon as that happened for us, we opened up some races for virtual. We added some like spring series and summer series fun virtuals that kept people moving. We added Trans Texas, which is where you can run across the country as a relay team. And we really tried to move quickly. And a lot of that was because we were getting hundreds of messages from our community that was like, how do we donate to you? And I was like, we're not a donation company. You know, we're a service company. Like, let us do something that makes us some money and that also gives you something to do, and we'll be okay. Like, we're going to be fine irregardless, but like, let's do something like that rather than like, you ask me where my GoFundMe, like, I don't need a GoFundMe. I need, like, I'm someone who work is purpose, right? So I need to work.
I mean, yeah. You need something to do. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to work. I can't sit at home either. So yeah, I mean, we started cranking virtuals soon. I mean, as soon as that happened, and up until July, so for about 3 or 4 months, I'll tell you how busy I was. I would go in the office and I would ship till like 3 o'clock, and then I would come home for like 3 hours, and then I would ship at night. And that's crazy, but that's how busy we were. We were getting in hundreds of orders for like our old virtuals or like random mystery box stuff. Like, people really were, and this happened to a lot of people. It's not just us, but people were just like, really wanted to support the race directors and the communities that they were in. And for those of us that had virtuals open, like, people really like were good with that. They were like, hey, if you put a race, I'll buy a virtual race, so I have something to do. It helps your race directors out. And then that really is what kept so many people afloat that are race directors that I know personally, that had like really extended, and there's some of them that are still like that, like California, where they can't put on races. Like, I have friends of mine that haven't put on a race in years.
Wow.
So I think that that's what we all had to do in that time period, was like, find out what our communities wanted, adjust, turn the page. That's what we did. And then even when we started putting on races in like October, we were putting on races in October just so we could get, I honestly was putting on races in October to try to work through our COVID policy before Brazos Bend, because the races didn't have the like 150, 200 people, which we knew what would happen. So we actually put 3 races on to work through the COVID policy leading to Brazos Bend. And then ultimately Brazos Bend got canceled.
Yeah. But it's a good test pilot. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, we needed to do it. I mean, our policy was so stringent with masks and, you know, and it is stringent essentially that we wanted to do it. So ultimately it's like, the hits aren't over. We had to cancel a race 2 weeks ago because of, apparently we live in Alaska, Texas, That's the new country. It's a new state we live in, which is like insane. But yeah, it's, you know, but you know what? And this happened when the cold hit just the other day. If you're a race director or if you're an events person, you're used to this stuff. This is not like, as much as it sucks and as much as it's kind of like discomforting and all those things, when you run events, you throw 100 balls in the air every event, and you're basically trying to have them all fall in your hands all at the same time. So we should be good at this, and ultimately we are good at this, but we're only good with it because we've done it for forever. And it's ultimately like, it's just like an ultra runner or endurance athlete or someone who does long stuff. You know the day's not going to be perfect the second you start your race. It's not going to be a perfect race. So you always have to be, you know, watching what you're doing, planning ahead, changing your plans. And ultimately that's what, you know, that's what we have to do.
Well, that's super cool. I mean, it speaks volumes that, yeah, there's going to be 1 to 10% that just complain about anything. They would have complained that it was too sunny out, whatever. But then you have this other group, you have the 99%+ that says, come up with a cool, different theme virtually. We're going to do it. So many people don't like virtual races, but your cult community is like, we want to do it. Come up with something fun. And I think people love, I see people posting up your medals all the time because it's different. It's unique. It's fun. They look forward to it. Looking at some of the stuff that, you know, I look at some of the races and for lack of a better term, it's a sausage party. I mean, like, but you're attracting all the, you know, men and women and slow runners, fast runners. I love it because I could go to your, when I go to your races, they're like, oh, where's the drop back? Oh, we coned off an area. It's, you know, everybody trusts each other. There's nothing weird. Which I just love the culture of trail running. And there's a lot of, you know, road races too, but I just think it's really cool that people, and oh, before I forget, you know, how do they find out about your race? Is it Trail Racing Over Texas? Is it better to do your Facebook page? What's the best way to get like the up-to-date stuff?
Yeah, trailracingovertexas.com is the best. We post everything through there. Of course, you can find us on social media, Instagram and Facebook and those things. But the truth is like Trail Racing Over Texas will always have all the schedule. It'll always have, you know, all that stuff. And I appreciate that you like that about trail races. I mean, trail races, the last 2 years have been 50% men, 50% women. And then the average age of a trail runner is like 36+. So it's an older group per se. But I think that's kind of like speaks to the culture, and that it also speaks to, I would say, armness and policies of making sure that when we have issues, we haven't had a lot, but when you have your little issues, that it's not something that's swept under the rug. There's a no-go boundary for anything that's sketchy or that's grimy or that's, you know, I've kicked people out of our race series because of the way that they talk to people online, you know, that are females, or they talk to other people like that. It's just, it's not a place for that. This is a place we built Trot to be accepting for everybody, no matter what. Doesn't matter what you believe in or, you know, your orientation, or does that make a difference? You're essentially supposed to come to our races and be able to be who you are 100% and not be worried about how people see you, and you're supposed to feel welcomed. And if you don't feel that way, then for me, that's a problem. And I have to fix that. And the reason that it's always been that way is because that's how I felt. That's a direct feeling of when I was overweight and I got into trail running, no one looked at me and said, man, you're really fat guy to be out here 290 pounds trying to run an ultra. You know, you don't look like an ultra runner. You don't, because that's not the way that the community was. People are all shapes and sizes. People have lost weight, been through divorce, they're drug addicts, they're trauma victims. And being out in nature and being around a tribe of people really gives them purpose. And it gives me purpose as my own self. So ultimately that's the way that it always has to stay. And I think that's the allure and the attraction for people that are in the cult is it's a safe space to bring their family. It's a safe space to bring their kids. It's a safe space to come and run. Women can come and run on their own, or they can run with friends, and they're not worried about, you know, what's going to happen or if something's going to happen. They know that we have their back, and they know that the community is supported in that way. And it makes it for a really, you know, good experience for everybody all around. And it has to continue that way. Like, there's just no other choice.
Yeah, that's super cool. Because when I first heard about trail racing, which Brez has been, and I didn't know if is it going to be flat? Am I going to be running over tree limbs? Like, you just never know what you're going to get as far as terrain. But as far as the community, it's amazing. But yeah, let's I'll let you go here pretty soon. But I know you got other stuff to do besides yap at me. There's so many races like Brazosban. I'm thinking, you know, it's flat. Everything's great. But yeah, you also do like the Franklin Mountain. So do you basically have like three different types of races, like flat, hilly, and mountain, or what are?
Yeah,
because you have everything.
When I started trail racing over Texas, I mean, I probably shouldn't have said this, but when I did say it, I was young, and I said, I'm going to start trail racing over Texas, and I'm going to take over trail running in Texas. And it ruffled a lot of feathers because people were like, who is this young guy? He's never done it. He's going to come in here and start doing this. But my point was to add these events and to start to go find places in Texas. Instead of just staying an hour or 2 hours from my house, I really wanted to explore the state, and we did. And along the way, I wanted to add these little pieces to our race schedule that were different, because for me personally, I want a different race. So, you know, around Houston, you're going to get flat and fast for the most part, unless we go to 7IL, which is more sandy, because it's, you know, because it's cattle land. But, you know, when we go to West Texas, far West Texas, the Franklin Mountains is definitely the toughest race that we have. It was a sky running race, which means it's one of the toughest races in the country. I mean, it's tough terrain. It's at altitude, 7,000 feet, but it's also the only state park that's in the city limits. So you have great cell phone service. The start finish line is like 4 miles away from a hotel. There's a hospital like 100 feet outside the park entrance. Like, it's a unique experience. And then I think when you get into your like East Texas Pines, which is like Running the Rose, Mission Tejas, you get these like rolling hills through these huge pines that you can barely see out of, that I think are great. And then we just like Possum's Revenge, which is run around the lakes up there, the Possum Kingdom Lake, where it's like super, super rocky per se. And it's like limestone rock, but you run along the lake, you run around the lake per se. So yeah, I think, you know, I try to do all that. We have timed race, you know, at Jackalope Jam, which is like you're running down a gravel road for up to 4 days, for up to 3 days. We have a last man standing race we're going to put in. We just finished a race called the Tour de los Tejas, which was a 600K, 383-mile road race that you went really from Austin to Brazos Bend back to Austin and never touched the same spot. So I'm always willing to kind of throw in or try to pull off a race that we've never done, because it adds spice to it. And then I'm always trying to find good partners to add in. So I'm hoping to add in a race over at Dana Peak next year. I'm looking to move to go back to Bucher, which was the original Habanero, for a race called Sasquatch. I'm always trying to kind of manipulate. But I will tell you this, and there is people that know this because I've been vocal about it, but over the past couple of years, and that will continue, I will continue to pull our races closer to my house, because I have a 2-year-old, and my days of going to do these remote races that take 2 weeks that barely anyone shows up to, but it's like the craziest thing ever, those days are probably over for me.
Even if the races are close or far, I mean, your community just loves to support the races. And I didn't even write this down. You have like a really cool volunteer program, so promote that. No, actually, before I say that, if people have questions, go to Trail Racing Over Texas Facebook page, but there's also a community page where you can ask questions, and people are super nice and super friendly. Like, I've never ran a trail race. Is this a good trail race to start off with? And, you know, things like that. I really want people to ask questions, but you have a really cool volunteer program. Can you kind of promote that for people that may just want to check it out? Because that's how I got started into road racing was, okay, I'll volunteer at an aid station and see if there's like the slow runners like myself. I'm still slow to this day. So yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. You slow and party though. That's the way we've always been. So, but you know what? When we got into the sport, no one gave volunteer credits, and it was like you volunteered because you wanted to, but there was no incentive to volunteer. And the one thing that I realized when we started in 2014 was, I said, we're gonna, just based on my business sense, we're gonna be able to get a lot of people to run our races, but if we don't have great volunteers, that want to be there, that are having fun, that are dedicated to volunteering and make the race, then we're not going to be successful. And I got some great advice that someone said, you're only one person at the race, but those runners at those aid stations in the middle of the night, they're going to remember that guy that made up the quesadilla or they gave him that bowl of soup. They're not going to remember you in that instance. So you got to have great people. So from the get-go, our policies never change, but from the get-go, we give people that volunteer for us 50% race credit. We give them a shirt, swag, and food, as long as it's available, free parking, free camping if we have it, for each shift that they work. So if they come out of work an eight-hour shift at an aid station, they get 50% off a race. If they work a double, then they get a free race. So essentially, for people that are new to trail running, they can jump in, they can do volunteering, they can see what it's about, see what everyone looks like, right? Like get the idea of the culture and then come and do it. The other part that's probably the most amazing part is because this is very different, but everyone has a race director, right? Like you have a guy that's the race director, right? That's me. That's cool and all. But because we always thought volunteering was more important than race director, we have a volunteer coordinator every day, which is Rachel, who's always coordinated all the volunteers behind the scenes. So whenever they email to get the list and what shift they're going to work, Rachel has always done all of that, scheduled them, made videos that tell people how to work our aid stations, to tell people what to look for. And then at the races, we have a race director like me, and then we have a volunteer coordinator or director, which is usually Amanda or Rachel. And they're basically massaging the volunteers, making sure they have what they need at their aid stations. If there's a problem, let us know. So we take it of utmost seriousness of how we want our volunteers to be treated, how we want them to have fun, to be their own people. They dress up at the aid stations. So our program has been top-notch since the beginning. Our dedication to communication and dedication to really helping our volunteers be the best has always been second to none. And ultimately, that is one of the biggest compliments that we've gotten for the 8 years that we've raced, or 7 years, has been like, you guys have the best volunteers. Yes, we do. We have world-class volunteers that love to volunteer, and they make that aid station and that experience wonderful. And our job as a company is to empower those volunteers, is to give them the tools they need, to let them have fun, and make it so that, yes, they get race credits, but man, I have a list of probably 200 people that have never used their race credits because they don't ever run our races, or B, they just would rather, they don't, there's some people that like, I don't want no volunteer credit, I'll pay for your races, but like, I'd love to volunteer. And that came from the enjoyment that I had volunteering, and you know, Rachel's background being in service as well, and especially in food service, she's been able to cultivate this great system of being safe with food and still having fun. And yeah, our volunteers are insane.
Yeah, Rachel's amazing. That's why I think I've heard you on a podcast before, and you used to do another podcast, so you got to bring that back. But hand in hand, and I know it, how it is working with your spouse. She is definitely the co-race director. I think you've mentioned that before, so I want to clear that up.
No, for sure. She's been from the get-go. I mean, she's,
oh yeah,
her name's half 50% on the LLC, so she's half owner.
And you mentioned that you want to take over Texas, and I want to clarify that as well, because you're just elevating the sport. I've seen some of the other races that have elevated, not to your level, but you know, they're trying to keep up with the other trail racing companies. I don't believe there's really competition. There's what, 10 million people in Texas, something like that. Yeah. I have no idea, but I think you just really have that really good mentality, and you support the other races. Whether it's road, I mean, I've seen you all over the place. I can normally see you because I can hear you, number one, but also you always have some sweet threads on. When did that start?
You know what? That was just one of those things where, I don't know, I think once I became comfortable in front of people and my own self, like I would start to dress up and like wear crazy suits or wear outfits, like be who I really am as a person. So it just took a little bit of time. I think, you know, for me, the first couple of years was being really serious. And then, you know, once the seriousness wore off, meaning like that I felt comfortable where we could have some fun, like I definitely have tried to implore that. And that's just me ultimately being who I am. And, you know, like I've, you know, painted toenails from Christmas And, you know, like, I don't know. I just, that's just me as a person. So for me, it's just kind of like, hey, I want to bring that fun of it, to races. And, you know, I just not.
Your volunteers are amazing. I think it's great because whether they race or not, the volunteers want to be there. I have that sense of just the energy that comes from the volunteers, and love it. But yeah, I'll let you go. I will give you another plug here. Just anything else you want to talk about, because definitely check out the races, go to Trail Racing Over Texas, ask the questions on the Facebook community page. What's your next race coming up if they're listening to this when this comes out here in February or March?
Sasquatch is going to be next weekend, March 6th at Mission Tejas State Park. And then a couple weeks after that will be San Felipe Shootout, which is right here in San Felipe, Texas, just west of Katy. So yeah, both races pretty close and yeah, good times.
We didn't really mention it, but yeah, you have some great COVID protocols. So don't worry too much about that. You can kind of see that stuff on the website. All right. So we got one more thing. We got a lightning round, 3 questions. Are you ready? Okay.
Oh, for sure. I love
lightning. I know you're always ready.
Oh yeah. All right. Good.
Question number one, describe your running style using an animal.
Wounded rhino.
Nice. What is your favorite? Question number two, what is your favorite race to direct?
Franklin Mountains.
Oh, nice. Just because it's so unique.
There's a really long uphill section to finish. And like people hate it. And that's where the F you Rob phrase was like born and how it got on a shirt. And people just finish up this grueling hill after being out there for like 36 miles. And it's hard for me to explain, but there's a look in people's eyes when they finish that race, especially if they've never been in mountains or they've never been pushed, that I don't know. When I've seen it in people's eyes, and I've seen it in a lot of people's eyes, that it makes me like really happy to race direct. And I race direct it always on the weekend of my birthday.
So. Oh, super cool. Oh, everyone, check that one out.
Special weekend.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, this is the most controversial lightning round question that I have for you.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so here we go. Tacos, red or green salsa?
Red.
Nice.
Yeah.
Even for eggs?
Yeah, I'm a red, and I'll tell you why that is, but I have actually directed a race down in the Copper Canyons. And have been down in the Copper Canyons a few times. And this is some trivia for your folks, but the actual state pepper of Texas is the chiltepín. That is the name of the pepper. And a friend of mine, who's a business partner, but long story short, is they have wild chiltepín in the canyons. And chiltepín is amazing. And I have some here, and we're going to actually start selling it through another company, but chiltepín is red. So down in the canyons, they take the chiltepín and smash it up and make it into a red salsa. It is hot as hell, but it's also like super amazing, and they use it on everything. So chiltepín salsa is hands down the best stuff that I have ever had.
Well, super cool. I'm definitely going to check that out. Yeah. Once again, Rob, appreciate it. I know between the Alaska freeze that we had and racing, we've been playing phone, email, / podcast tag. So yeah, appreciate it again, Rob. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Keith.
Well, everybody, the podcast is free. All we ask is if you know somebody that could use this information, share it with them. And if you are an Apple Podcast, if you could rate us, leave us a review, even better. I'm looking forward to sharing another episode next week.
Thanks for visiting the Houston Running Zone. If you know someone you'd like to be featured in the zone, go to thehoustonrunningzone.com and send us a message. Until next week, always remember, Houston, we've got the runs.